Christmas movie?
I actually do. It might be my favorite Christmas movie. My wife suggested we watch with the kids the other day, and I was like, not sure that that movie is kid appropriate. So
what age are they? Like nine and something?
Like 11, 8, and 6. So like a decade away from being ready for that. But
yeah, yeah. There is, but I remember there used to be two versions. I remember when I was a kid, when I was like 15, I remember being like, oh, Die Hard. And there's a version that has no swear words, no, like you can't see any of the killings. You can't, there's no swear words. So he's like,
is it like 9 minutes long? Because I feel like he's, that's no, like
it's like
movie.
It's like overdubbed. So it's like yippee-ki-yay mother frickers, or you know, like that kind of stuff.
But
it's
like, all right, I gotta go find that.
I only saw it once, and I remember every year since I'd be sitting down to watch Die Hard, and I'd be like, oh god, I hope this isn't the. But I've never. I don't know. Maybe I imagine it. Maybe it didn't actually happen. Right? Is it? You're in your house now, in your home.
Yeah.
And where is that? What state?
About a half hour south of San Francisco.
All right, okay. And is that like, do you work from there, or are you like hybrid working?
We've still got a little office down in Santa Cruz, so I'm down there about 2 days a week. Have a reasonable amount of travel, and then the other days I usually work from home.
And what's your? I kind of get the impression it's not possible to have like a 9 to 5 in your job. Like, is it just, does it just spill over like constantly into everything?
It is, it ebbs and flows. I'll put it that way. It's, there's not really a traditional week, and obviously we have such a global team and global community and then events and all that stuff. So it can get odd and unusual at times.
Did you assume that was going to be the case? Has that been the case with all the jobs you've had? Like these, you know, like when you're at the other companies you're at, that you like could get a text in the middle of the night and be like, right, got to jump on a call or whatever.
Like I said, it ebbed and flowed. There were, my first job was at Google, and that was during kind of a crazy time. It was super manic. I was also young and not married and didn't have kids, so I was cool, like keeping ridiculous hours.
Just arriving into work on your skateboard and being like, yeah, let's do whatever.
Or just sleeping at work. You know, why bother going home? And then had definitely peaks. Facebook, we had a big global team. So I traveled a lot for that job. I was on the road quite a bit. Not totally inconsistent.
You know, when you were in your other jobs, even like military and then the jobs you've mentioned there, were you forward facing? Like, were you doing this kind of thing? Were you doing
not like this? Not like this. I did a tiny bit of like press type stuff at Facebook, especially internationally. My teams were international, so I did some there. Military, I did a little bit of like a tiny, tiny bit of stuff. But this is by far the most.
Did you know that when you were like agreeing to do this or taking up this position, did you know that this was going to be a big part of it, or as big a part?
You know, on one level, I knew some of it. So I obviously knew that, you know, that CrossFit, that that we had a really engaged, passionate community, that there was a lot that we did that would require me spending time and talking about stuff. I think it's probably until you get in the role impossible to fully appreciate kind of what that means and what that looks like as you go through the ebbs and flows of things that happen in the community, right? You kind of got to experience it, I guess.
Did you think that the job, when you accepted the job, did you think that it would be what it is? Like, did you think, like, is it harder than you expected it to be? Is it more of an uphill battle than you thought?
It is, you know, it's funny. I came into the job, I had been doing CrossFit for a while, so I knew it through the lens of like a member of the community and like experiencing my affiliate and drop-ins, but I hadn't been in the community as an owner or working at HQ. I came in with, I guess on two ends of the spectrum, really excited about the things that I thought would be really amazing about the role, and also eyes wide open that like I knew where CrossFit was in its history. I knew the stuff that had gone down over the last few years. I knew where the state of the team was. I knew a lot of the challenges. So I also knew it was going to be really hard. And I, like, looking back on it, both of those are more extreme than I anticipated. It is more amazing in ways that I couldn't have fully appreciated. Like, talking to people and hearing, you know, whether it's owners who tell their life story of how they started the affiliate and the lives they've been able to impact, or members of the community, that has been incredible. And I think the opportunity, continue to believe the opportunity we have is bigger and more profound. It's also been much harder. And I knew a lot of the job was going to be a lot of, you know, for us, a lot of change management. Like, hey, we are going through an evolution, and CrossFit had gone from, you know, Greg founding and running the company to selling it to a new CEO, to a phase through COVID, to I knew I was coming in this new leadership. And I knew that there was a lot of, there were many things we had to tackle to figure out, like, how do we, in some respects, make sure we really acutely understand and stay committed to the things that have made CrossFit so special. But we also have to evolve. Like, if we want to take this thing forward, we have to be willing to change. And I knew that managing that was going to be hard, but it's been much harder than I anticipated.
Have you any like regrets over taking it? Have you any like?
No. Zero. I like, you know, I mean, have there been moments where I'm like, what the F did I sign up for? For sure. You know, no doubt. But when I zoom out, like, I don't know, like, this is going to sound cheesy, but like, I wanted a job that I like had real meaning and purpose. I wanted to work around people who are committed to doing something bigger, who are selfless. And I like doing hard things, and this is really hard. And I like probably made more mistakes in this job than any other job I've had. I've learned a lot. I feel like we've, as a team, have made a lot of progress in a bunch of areas, and I am both, you know, there are moments where I'm like, holy cow, this is insanely hard and frustrating at times, but it's also really rewarding when, you know, see the areas where we make progress.
Is it like, you know, you hear about people buying a house and they like open a random door and they're like, oh Jesus, look at this shit in here that I didn't know was here. And like, nobody told me about, is it that kind of thing where you're uncovering things as you go and being like, why did nobody say this was a thing?
I mean, we kind of half joke, like, if you were going to write the, you know, the history of CrossFit, or like if it was going to be a streaming series, you know, it's like there's been like 12 seasons with 10 episodes each and like playing catch up. It's just, obviously there's nothing like it. It's so unique. There are so many chapters. There are so many things that have happened. And again, it's in both ways. Like, you hear about things where like, wow, that's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. That's so cool. And oh my gosh, are we serious? You know, 15 months in and discovering things like that. So, you know, hopefully those number of things kind of come down over time, but there's certainly some of that.
Hmm. Is it difficult doing what you do and like managing, you talked about managing change and stuff, like when you came in, so there's obviously been some changes in personnel and stuff, and there's been like some people have left, some people who were, say, part of, I don't know if you can call it administrations or whatever, but like the previous administration to you have gone and they've been replaced, or there seems to be kind of structural changes almost. Yeah. Is that a tricky thing to do with, like, what are you looking for there? Is it like when you bring someone in, is experience the first thing you're thinking about? Is like culture? Is it like, you know, is it a blend of those things? Like, how do you prioritize one over the other, or how do you do that?
So, yeah, I mean, I guess what I'd start with on this is a lot of it started with the work that we did to kind of lay out where we were going. Like, what do we believe we need to achieve? Like, what does success look like? And what's the work that's required to get there? What do we need to be great at to make this future version of the CrossFit community possible? And we've talked a little bit about that high level, and a lot of it is about like, just how do we impact and change more lives, and then all the work. And so a lot of it works backwards from there to say, okay, that's what we need to go do. When we look at our team, where are we exceptionally strong and well-positioned? And then where do we need to complement the team with experience, skills, perspective that can complement it? And this is, I think this is true of any organization as it evolves, like any company, any group. For us, when it comes down to, you know, filling roles, the first and most important thing is passion for our, like, what we're trying to achieve. That doesn't mean you have to have been like, it doesn't mean you have to have done CrossFit for a decade, for 5 years, et cetera. But it has to, when we talk about what we're trying to enable, you know, the impact we're trying to have through CrossFit, that has to get you really fired up and really excited. Because this job is hard. And if you're not connected to that, candidly, you're not going to make it. And I think at organizations that are doing hard things, it's never the money or the role or the title that keeps people around. It's like a lot of our owners, like, it's not about the paycheck. It's about their deep passion and commitment to the impact they want to have on people. So that's first and foremost. So that's easy if you have someone who's been in the community for a long time. That's harder for folks who are new. And so try to suss out there. I will always tell people, like, if you've not already done CrossFit, go do it and then come back to me. And if you hate it, let's save both of ourselves a lot of time. If you love it, great. Let's talk about what that means. So that's number one. Number two, particularly for folks who are coming from outside environments. And I think this is particularly true of experienced and senior folks. Ideally, we're looking for someone who can bring something new to our team that can help us be better. And so that could be experience, that could be a skill set, that could be domain expertise. We have to have confidence that person can understand how to make that experience work in our really unique community and company with our methodology and what makes CrossFit so special. And this is something I learned in previous jobs in tech companies. You would hire someone from, oh, I was at Facebook, let's go hire people from Google, because a lot of what we're trying to do is pretty similar. We're going to sell ads. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And the folks who failed the most were folks who came in and said, I'm going to do exactly what we did at Google. We're just going to do this. They fail every time. The more senior they are, the more impact they have. So for me, what I really want to assess is, can the person come in with, again, skill experience that can help us and complement us, but can they also come in with the humility to come in and recognize that they may have 20 years, 15 years, whatever experience, but they need to learn from our community, from our team, if they're going to be able to apply their experience in a way that helps us. And so that, I'd say, is the passion. That's number two. Can this person come in and adapt and apply their experience that moves them forward? And then I'd say, you know, domain expertise is part of it, but those two are first and foremost, I'd say, the most important.
Mm-hmm. Is the one of the things that was there before you were there, I think, was the DEI Council. Is that still there? Is it still in effect?
So we don't have the council itself, we wound that down. So we looked at, you know, we talked to everybody, amazing folks on the team who on that council who volunteer their time. We decided to hit kind of pause and wind that down. And that happened about 6 months ago.
Okay. Was that just like a time thing? Just like an effort thing? Or
I think it was, you know, one thing I would say is, you know, there's a couple of things I'd say. One, I think if we look at big picture, if we look at the impact that council had, and again, this is more on us than it was on the people on the people in the organization were amazing. Collective, when we looked and said, hey, are we having a positive impact? Are we really moving the needle? In general, we looked around and said, we're not. I think, are there opportunities where we can work to make sure that we have an environment that is representative of our communities? I think there are definitely still opportunities there. There were two big insights I'd say that came out of it. One, we actually, by and large, I think CrossFit is one of the most inclusive, welcoming communities that exists on the planet. Like, where else can you walk into a building with a bunch of strangers and most of the time have a high degree of confidence you're going to be incredibly welcomed? So I think we looked and say, I'm not sure we were focused on the right problems. I do think there are areas when we look at the average CrossFit, is it reflective of who we'd like to get into the gym? I think there are areas and communities where we don't do a great job of that. And so I think we decided at the time, let's hit pause on this. We wanted to focus internally on work that we were doing around our organization. And then we wanted to come back when we had more conviction around where we're already great, and then where are the opportunities where we can lean in and really have an impact that supports the overall community.
Yeah, that's cool. I think most people who had a gripe with the fact that it was in existence, that was the gripe, that it was like, how can you, like, the insinuation is then the CrossFit isn't inclusive. And I think that was it is the most inclusive. So it's like, if you're tall, short, well, if you're short, you're better. But if you're tall, short, fat, thin, black, white, like literally doesn't make a difference. Like able-bodied, like, you know, it doesn't matter. And I think that was most of the gripe that was with it.
Yeah. And Peter, when I think about that, actually, like, I want to, big picture, when I think about that, I want, over the long run, I think there are a bunch of areas, our work in that area, you know, one, we need to create a culture internally that reflects, and we've got great folks in the team, we wanted to focus on that, but long term, like, I want to be able to make sure that CrossFit is accessible to anyone who can benefit from it. And so I think we have, like, some of the barriers, I think we have socioeconomic barriers. When you look at the average monthly price, we have barriers around big parts of the world where we don't have affiliate penetration. I think those are some of the things. We do have some areas when you look at, we don't have a lot, you know, in the US, we don't have a lot of African Americans when you walk into the average gym. We're underrepresented there. And so that's something, I think that's also true at the games level. I think we're underrepresented there. So I think that's a question for us to ask. Why is that the case? If we believe there's an opportunity there, is it a pricing issue? Is it something else? So I think there's more work we need to do to figure out, hey, if we feel like we, there are parts of what could be our community that are not engaged in CrossFit yet, what are the things that we can do to get more of those folks in the front door? Because we know if they walk in the front door, in general, we've got this incredibly welcoming and inclusive community.
With someone just, I'll just click it. Someone just asked a question. Do I do the open? Yes. I'm like, what a time to ask that question. And thanks for the money though. There was a nice one here. Hang on. I'll just bring this one up because I thought it was sweet.
Well, it's just thanks, Will. Christmas appreciate that. That's nice.
The hires then as well. So like, say there's been a furore, proud of that use of that word, recently. Good. I guess two of the recent hires stand out. So like, were you aware of the potential backlash that might come after Jada Coons was hired? Like, were you aware of that, or did that come, like, did you learn about that, say, when I learned about that?
So I didn't know about Jay didn't know about the South by Southwest video. I did not know about that. So we found out at the same time you did. That being said, I did know.
Can I ask, before, yeah. Sorry, when you found, I'm just trying to picture that in my head. So like, are you guys all together? Is it sent around in an email?
Our leadership team was together, actually.
And what's the atmosphere like in the room when that, like, when I, if you're all watching at the same time, is it just like you could hear a pin drop, or like, what's happening?
It was, you know, I'll, part of it was, you know, you get it bits and pieces. So a little bit of it was, oh shit. And then, hey, what happened here? And so kind of working through it and, you know, and then figuring out, okay, given what happened here, what's the kind of best path forward in it? And, you know, in that scenario, wanting to make sure that we did the best job we did of responding and answering and supporting Jay and supporting the team in it. You know, I will say, like, obviously, I knew Jay came from a background having worked in a franchise business. Obviously, I knew that. I knew there was going to be, you know, for some folks, concern about just the fact that we hired someone who had worked in a franchise environment. For some folks, I think, you know, you hear different camps on this. Some folks saying, hey, it's great to have people who have seen different environments, as long, again, as they can apply it in a way that works for us. There are some folks who I think look at that and say, oh shit, this is bad, because that fundamentally must mean that CrossFit's moving in a certain direction. And so I knew that. And candidly, we should have done a better job communicating that. We didn't do a great job with that. And, you know, that was in the moment, in the immediate aftermath of that, that was a conversation we had to say, I don't regret for a second. Jay's amazing. And everyone who gets to know him, I don't regret that. He's doing fantastic work. The way we introduced it and the way we communicated it, we should have done better.
Yeah. I've spoken to a couple of people who've met him and know him. And the general consensus is that he's like, incredibly intelligent, but also humble enough to be like, how does this work? Or why are you doing it that way? Or, you know, like, and I guess that's what you want when, like you say, you don't want him coming in saying, well, this is what I did at my last job, so I'm just going to do it here. Speaking of, though, like pretty soon after his appointment and the, you know, hubbub around that, then an email went out to affiliate owners, like a survey. And like,
why did we do that?
Yeah, what happened there? Like, that's sure, that's a big kick in the dick for affiliate owners when they see like franchising and all this kind of stuff. If there was already a bit of trepidation and fear, and like you mentioned, people were aware of the fact that he came from that, and then this goes out. Is that just a blunder?
I'll walk through it. In part, it was deliberate. In part, I think I'll take ownership for this. I didn't appreciate how that would be received, and the dots, folks would look to kind of connect dots on things. And that's just a miss. So to walk you through leading up to, so we had been talking about the pricing changes and the education requirements for 6 months. We spent a lot of time on it, and we spent a lot of time on doing the work. So well in advance of Jay joining us, we had been spending a lot of time on this, and we wanted to spend a lot of time to do the best we could to try to get it right. And so we talked to a lot of owners, et cetera. We also looked at, hey, how do we get some data here to inform our changes associated with the value of affiliation? And what we ended up doing is a fairly common tactic that folks will do to reach out and say, how do you think about the value associated with, in this case, affiliation in general? And then very specifically, how do you think about the value associated with getting new members, with the support requirements, with gatherings? And then what would you like to see moving forward? Now, the decision we had to as part of that was, generally when those things are done, almost every case, they're done blind. And so that means if we had sent the survey from CrossFit to our owners saying, tell us about how much, essentially tell us about pricing changes, it just has an impact, right? There's bias that's introduced. So in general, when organizations do this, they try to do it, you know, in some sort of blind fashion. We actually talked about upfront that said, hey, look, our community is small. We know there will be a point when, we communicate, folks say, hey, it looks like CrossFit's doing a survey. At that point, we're going to acknowledge and say, yes, it's us. But we wanted to get some data ahead of that to inform these changes and try to get data that we felt like was kind of representative. So that was the thinking around why we chose to do a survey. Hey, we don't want to make this decision on a whim. We want to try to get some data to inform it and get it from our owners themselves based on their lived experience. And then two, we chose to do it in a blind fashion because we wanted to get signal that wasn't biased, that we could actually have confidence and act on. Again, to your question, what I didn't anticipate and should have was the dot connecting to say, shit, it says franchise on it. Is this yet another signal that should get us concerned about the direction that we're moving?
So like that's like a trial by fire. It's kind of like an immediate hazing for Jay when he comes in because he has the kind of media frenzy about it. Then there's that like fire that has to be put out as well on top.
Yeah.
It, like, I'm guessing that the fact that he's made it through that probably says a lot about him that like, yeah, he's good. You know, like, it's just like,
and I'll tell you, he is, you'll probably, he's the most positive person, like resilient. You know, I told him that morning, I'm like, that's your official welcome to the CrossFit community. Like, you get, like, that's how passionate this community is. You know it. And that's a learning for us. And so, yeah, Jay was, has been amazing. I mean, you can imagine that being your first 30 days.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah. It's make or break. Another, there was like a furore again around, Josh Grau was another hire that kind of caused a bit of a fuss. I haven't heard him mentioned at all in like, is he still around? Is he still there? Has he made it through his like hazing?
So, Josh transitioned. So he left.
Okay. And was that just like, I'm not putting up with the level of scrutiny, or was it just like personal reasons or whatever?
Yeah, it's so personal, and so I won't go into the details on it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Feel free to reach out to Josh. Also, what I will say is Josh is an exceptionally talented leader, marketer, etc. Like, and a great, great person. So
yeah. With that kind of stuff, and that, like, it serves its uses for you, I'm sure. Like, when there's, you know, like that external media, we've talked about it before. The external media that it promotes the sport, it promotes the methodology, it holds things to a high standard, the scrutiny holds things to a high standard, and it, you know, pushes things to be better and rising tides, etc. But then there are pitfalls that come with it for you, where it's like, oh, fucking hell, just like lay off for a little while, like, or just like don't pull back that curtain just yet, we're not ready for that to be bought, they've already pulled it back. Is there any kind of annoyance from HQ's part, the fact that responsibility was released, like that it's out, like that there's not as much of internal control over what goes out, because everybody that was on the media team was like pushed off into pasture and they all set up their own little pockets?
I think there is there's a lot of levels to this, so bear with me. I think one, there are elements of it that I think are really, you know, really good and positive for the community. I think for a long time my sense is like there was one voice in the ecosystem and it came from HQ, and it was a strong and powerful voice. And post 2018, 2019, as the media team, you know, went out, we now have a lot of voices. And I think if we do a great job of that, that can be a real asset and strength for us. That can speak to the community in different ways. We've got creative people working on things. It also comes with its challenges. There's no question. I think for us, one of the things that is an opportunity is we have to play so the fact that we've got strong voices in the community doesn't absolve us from having a strong voice, and we need to do a better job there. And so I think we need to continue to play a leadership role in making sure that our affiliates and our community are hearing from us and they understand where we're going and the intent around it. And I think my learning from some of the survey and Jay thing is look, we have zero intent to become a cookie cutter franchise. Like, we get it. We get what makes this community so freaking special. We had not done a good enough job of communicating that with conviction to our community. So when they see a price change, they can say, hey, don't freak out, guys. Like, HQ has no intent to take away the things that we cherish. So we got to do better there. I'll be honest, there are moments where I think it is completely fair and healthy for there to be a level of accountability from media within the ecosystem. Like, I actually think that makes us better and forces us to be thoughtful and helps us identify times when we get it wrong. There are times, I think, when the tone of that within our community gets borderline toxic. I think, you know, coming back to one of the things that I think most people love about this community that makes CrossFit so special is the feeling you get when you walk into the affiliate. Like, nobody judges anybody. Like, everyone is there to support you, no matter who you are, where you came from, how well we know each other. There's this incredibly welcoming community. And at times I think, and again, some of this is on us, but at times I think some of the critique, which is fair, can happen in a way that creates a feeling that I think at times is actually the antithesis of what you feel when you walk into a gym. So I think you can be critical while with a supportive, inclusive tone. I think there are moments when we lose that a little bit. And I imagine, like, at times someone who's thinking about CrossFit and goes on social media to say, hey, what is this thing about? And they stumble upon some of the dialogue that happens at times. And I think that there's risk they get the wrong impression. They look and say, whoa, at times this can get really negative. So I think about that a lot, and like, how do we influence that? Are there ways that we can influence that? That, again, we can preserve the space where folks can critique and challenge, et cetera, but also elevate the dialogue to make sure that, like, we are really elevating the values that we see inside the box in our discourse as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's a tricky one to balance, I guess, because I guess I just think that I can kind of think of the kind of things that you're branding as toxic, and I kind of view those more as like impassioned rather, you know what I mean? I guess it's kind of like what lens you're viewing it through, and you're like,
for
you
sure.
and HQ are probably viewing it as like shots fired at us, and it's a, you know, it's like bullets across the bow kind of thing. Like, whereas I view it from the outside, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm viewing it from a different lens of like, yeah, that is fucking annoying actually that they've done that, or like that they, you know, that this is a failing that should have been caught or whatever. It's a tricky one to balance, I guess, to, and then as well, you don't want it to be like propaganda where you're like, you know, smothering certain things, saying like, no, you can't say that. Like, you don't want to do sure. that either, muffle people. Yeah.
Oh no, I 100% agree. And I totally hear you. Like, it is absolutely like the lens through which you look at it. And to be really clear, like, you know, there have been moments in the past where there's been dialogue around like, and actually like I've heard from some folks in the media, like fear of asking hard questions because shit, are we going to get blackballed or something? And I think it's essential that we preserve an environment where you can critique us. Like the pricing survey thing, we should get critiqued on that. You should ask us hard, you should push us and say, hey guys, you can be better than this. And so to me, it's about, I imagine, again, someone who doesn't know CrossFit well, looking at the tone of it and saying, hey, is this a really good constructive discourse where they're being held accountable or something else?
Yeah. Have you ever thought about just like putting Hiller on a retainer or something, and then it's just like he's on the payroll? It's just like the videos have to go across your desk first, and you can be like, no, not that one.
Well, I mean, we both know like he wouldn't agree to that, nor would that solve any problem.
Yeah, I guess it probably depends what the number is, but yeah, you're probably right. One of the outlets that you do have, one of the kind of unofficial out there is. He says he's cheap. One of the unofficial outlets that you have that's kind of starting to become a bit of an official outlet is Dave's Week in Review. I was curious, like, so when I have notifications set, so when his video goes up, I get a notification, I go on, I watch it. I know Savan goes through his week, he does a review of the Week in Review on his show. I might start doing a review of the Week in Review's review. Does that, like, is that him doing that? Have you just got unbridled trust in the fact that he's singing off maybe a different page, but the same him book, and that like you trust that he's going to be like measured in what he says and what, you know, like that it'll make sense with the vision of what you guys are doing, and that like do you ever talk to him about, are you ever anxious when you see like, oh shit, there's another one up, do I need to watch this or anything?
No, I do trust. And, you know, part of that comes back to like my goal, our goal is just to be transparent about why we do things. And part of that transparency is we should be willing to talk about it. And so as a leadership team, we talk about why we do stuff. We talk about when we screw things up. And I trust that Dave, if Dave goes on there and tells the truth, I'm good with that. And, you know, I trust his judgment. I trust his understanding of these issues. And look, on the margin, generally, I would like for us to bias to be a little bit more transparent. I think that's a really good, authentic, organic channel that has been really helpful in communicating a lot of what we're doing to the community.
Do you watch it?
Every once in a while, not routinely.
You can say no, he's not going to watch this. So you can just be honest, say you don't watch it. Last week, he actually, someone asked about Greg having a non-compete. And the fact that that's up, and he said that he doesn't believe that it's of concern. He doesn't think that it's on Greg's radar to, you know, to start up like some kind of rival thing. That was his take. Has there been any kind of like, not worry, but like mild concern over like, oh shit, that date is actually coming up. Like maybe we should like have a conversation or see what the story is with that.
So, it, you know, Dave brought it to my attention. I wasn't actually aware of it coming in. And so it certainly has been something I've been aware of. You know, I look, for me, the way I think about it is I think we've got to continue to try to do what we think is the right thing for the community. And like at the end of the day, like, I think obviously Greg cares about CrossFit in the community. He's not going to agree with everything we do. You know, we're going to be best best suited, best positioned by trying to do our best to do the right thing by our owners, by members of the community.
Yeah. Is there like, so you said that you kind of have this kind of hybrid working thing, like from home and traveling and stuff. Is everybody the same? Is like you said, there's a small office. How small? Like, is there people that are there all the time?
It's really small now. So there was more critical mass pre-COVID down in Scotts Valley, which is right near Santa Cruz. COVID basically for CrossFit, like I think a lot of companies, folks ended up all over the place. So we only get a handful of folks, maybe 10 on a busy day in the office in Santa Cruz. We have another pocket of folks who were in the kind of Colorado, Denver area where we've got another location. Outside of that, folks are pretty spread out around the world, actually.
Do you think that, does that stifle anything, do you think? Like not having...
For sure. It sucks. Like straight up. I think the flexibility for folks is great, but building culture, building connection, being able to kind of really explore things is so much harder to do over Zoom or whatever. So we do, you know, we did once this year, we got the entire team together and you can feel after 4 days, just the trust that's built and people being able to have conversations that wouldn't otherwise happen. So it's hard. It's not optimal. We got to figure out how we create those connections the best we can in the world that kind of we live in today.
Why not just like move everyone, like just require everyone to live in one area? And as in, because even I think of like, I just think of an office and like, I just think of how much stuff is lost over, I can't be bothered putting that in an email. Or like, yeah. If in a normal scenario, it's like, hey, can everyone just jump in this room for 5 minutes? And we just need to talk about this video that just went up, or we need to talk about this problem, that this wrinkle that's coming down the track, instead of like, all right, guys, we're meeting on Zoom at 3 p.m. on Thursday, versus like everybody into this room now, conference room now, or whatever. I know I'm kind of picturing it as the office, like the sitcom office, like conference room, 5 minutes. But like, even that kind of stuff. Plus there's a thing of like, oh shit, I've got an idea. I'm going to go to like my direct superior and talk to them about this idea. And then someone else happens to walk into the room and be like, oh, have you thought about doing it this way? Like those kind of things are just like lost in the wind immediately. I suppose with that kind of not in situ office, that would be my concern, that there's a shit ton of stuff that's lost just because of missed opportunities that would organically arise in like a in-person. Is there like, have you discussed like, let's build an actual office and move everyone to one place?
So we have not. However, you know, look, all the stuff that you shared, I totally agree with, by the way. And if I could wave a magic wand and not disrupt everyone's life and have everybody living within a 30-mile radius, that would be awesome. I think the challenge is we just, you know, and I think this is what a lot of companies are facing. We just went through a period where a lot of people uprooted and moved all over the world, all over the place. And so doing something like that would be massively disruptive for our team. And so, you know, I think that for us, it's thinking about how do we, you know, what's the right path forward that allows us to capitalize on those things in a way that supports our team and the impact that something like that would have in their life. We don't have the answer. We don't have an explicit plan for it yet, but it is something we're kind of thinking about at a high level. Like, how do we do a better job of that? Because it is definitely really challenging.
Yeah. I mean, you're the CEO, so you can just kind of say like, fuck them. Like, we're moving. If you're in, you're in. If you're out, you're out.
That's right. You know, yeah. Item number one of my leadership philosophy. Fuck them. No,
page one.
Yes, in theory, Don, we could do that.
Don Fall, the management manual, page one, fuck them.
Exactly. Well, I'll reference you. You'll get the footnote in that. Everyone knows that wasn't from me.
I'll write your forward. One of the things that you said when you were on with me before, and someone actually asked it here in the comment, said that one of your main things is to have 30,000 members by 2030. This could be wrong, but you get my point. Where are we in this goal? That was like a kind of a talking point. You know, it was like one of the big goals that you guys had, like one of the main kind of, I don't know how to describe it, big overarching things. I guess, are you aware of where we sit with that? As in, it's a tricky thing to measure, isn't it? Like, because I know when you talked about it first, it was kind of like at CrossFit at every table, was like, or at every meal or whatever. And then it's like, is that, like, are you talking, like, do I count as someone who's just doing CrossFit in my house? Is it like actual affiliate members? And then how many affiliates would we need to like house that many people? Or is it just people who have been touched by it? And like me, who like I'm enveloped in it, but I'm not a member of an affiliate, but I would classify myself as being quite CrossFit.
Yes. So yeah. So the goal high level was 30 million. To 30 million. And we kind of got there by looking at, hey, roughly where do we think we are today? What do we think is a goal that is achievable that will really force us to think differently about it and would be really ambitious? We don't have good data today. So we don't even have good data on our affiliate community. So, you know, by virtue of our relationship, we don't know how many people are doing CrossFit inside of our existing community today. We're working on some of that. So we're working to look at, hey, can we partner with folks who have some of that data to get better signal on what membership looks like, what growth looks like?
Like, you know how many affiliates there are, but you don't know how many members are in each of an individual affiliate.
So yeah, exactly. In our ecosystem, right, they're not using our software, right? So affiliates are using a Wattify or a Zen Planner or take your pick. We don't have access to all of that data. So what we know largely for most of our affiliates right now, we know whether or not they're affiliated. That's kind of it. So we're working on a means of better understanding where we stand.
And is that today, going to those companies is like they want money for that, basically, is it?
Or
is
no,
it
actually, like, they've been we're in conversations. It's not necessarily. I think what we want to do is we think there are things that with that relationship we can do so they can deliver a better experience for their affiliates. So we're working on some things around kind of you know, a partnership that supports that.
Some back scratching.
That's right. That's the way to put it. Some back scratching. Yeah.
That's page 2 of the management manual. Page 1 is fucking page 2 is back scratching.
We're almost done. So you asked about, and rough, so finger in the air, candidly, you know, you look at 13,000 affiliates, let's call it somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 per, gets you to somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 million folks-ish training in affiliates. We do look at, so folks who are doing CrossFit at home, in other venues, that is part of our goal. So the overarching goal isn't just people training in affiliates. It's people around the world whose lives can be impacted by this incredible methodology, part of our community. So part of the path to getting to 30 million is, I think we do play a role in how do we make it, what are the things that we can do for folks like you to make it really easy to do CrossFit, to be a part of the community. You know, this is where CrossFit started, right? So it started as a virtual community with workouts posted on .com. We actually have not invested much in that for quite some time. So when we look at where we want to be 2030, this past year, if we look at overall growth, some of that third-party data shows us we grew, the community grew by about somewhere between 3% and 5%. If you're doing the math, that is not a good enough growth rate to get to 30 million. Not close. We need to massively turn the corner, get it up to closer to 30%. Some of that will be in, yes, we do need to add more affiliates. We think there's space to add more affiliates, but a lot of that also is providing a solution for folks who either prefer to or live in a, you know, work out at home or live in a place where an affiliate's not accessible. We want to make sure we've got a great experience where they can participate in CrossFit and be a part of the community.
Yeah. One of the other recent instances that rose up was the affiliate increase. And I heard you talking about this on Talking Elite Fitness. So I understand, like, big picture, it's additional income. It's additional, like, financing or whatever. One of the things that you said on that show with Sean and Tommy, you said that in, I think it was 2022, you said that the company broke even. Is that like, so I know that it's like investment, there's like investors investing in the company. And then I'm curious, is that breaking even after, like, after that return on investment for that year has been withdrawn? Or is that, so it's, is, does that mean 2022 is actually a deficit then?
Oh, it was, they, so the way our investors, so to clarify, So our investors made the investment when, so when Greg sold CrossFit to Berkshire and Rosa coming in, they paid cash for the company and they put some cash on the balance sheet as part of that. So they said, hey, we're going to put a little bit of cash into CrossFit to support ongoing operations. They will make money at some point in the future when they take their ownership in CrossFit and sell it. Okay. There is no annual kind of sharing of profits that they get right now. So we run our business. Our job is to, you know, grow the overall community, grow the business such that at some point in the future, CrossFit is reaching a lot more people and is worth a lot more.
Okay. Another thing that you said on that show that I wanted to dig into a little bit was you talked about using, like, increasing the budget as well as increasing the profits of the company, increasing the budget, and like where some of that money would go was one of the questions that Tommy asked. And you said that like media was something that you guys were looking at and like to increase visibility and stuff. Is that like, so say you did The Magic of CrossFit was a successful campaign last year this year. Mm-hmm. And there's always great content around the games. Like, you know, the open announcements and stuff, like the little short films and stuff that are during it. There was like, whatever, that woman was like, what, like 90 and was doing more than I do. And, you know, like there's these kind of things. Is there any danger, do you think, of like preaching to the converted a bit? Like where the budget, so is it safe to say then that the budget now might be allocated to like people who haven't even walked past the church, never mind been converted yet?
So I think it's a little bit of both. So when we look at right now, our overall priorities, we are not just going to focus on new members. There's work we need to do to make sure that we are doing a really good job of communicating and engaging our existing community for a couple of reasons. One, like we want them to retain and have a strong relationship with CrossFit and stay engaged with their affiliate. But also for us, we think that the absolute best driver of growth is passionate members of our community. It's word of mouth. And so part of what we want to do through our media is inspire and excite people to go out and tell people about it and equip them with messages and stories that they can share with their network that hopefully convinces some of those folks to get in the front door of an affiliate. That being said, I think historically preaching to our own audience has been one of our challenges. We are really good at speaking within the CrossFit bubble. We have not done enough to speak to folks who have not yet been converted. And that comes down to, I think, one, we have to do a better job with the stories that are going to resonate with someone who is not a diehard member of our community already. What do they need to see and hear? Do we really understand that? Are we testing that? And then two, the channels so that we can reach them. If all we're doing is dropping all of our content on our existing channels that speak to our community, we're actually not reaching the people that we care about. So a lot of the work that we're doing right now is looking at how do we think about ways of getting these messages in front of people who are not already following us on Instagram, who are not already getting our email of the day. Some of that will come through traditional channels. So social can be really powerful if we do it well and reaching new audiences through our existing community. But we're also thinking about things like partnerships. I think we can do a much better job with PR. So we've got all these incredible stories. How do we get those stories amplified through outlets that get us in front of people? You know, we can do that by, we have just started to do a little bit of work. And this is a little bit kind of building on some of the media work with things like SEO. So search engine optimization. We don't do a great job right now of converting people who go to, let's take Google as the predominant search path. We don't do a great job of converting people who search for CrossFit near me. If you go do that right now, your top result in the US is probably going to be Orange Theory.
Yeah. So like even
we are losing our own search. And
like Lucky Camera Straps here said, CrossFit HQ doesn't rank on the first page for is CrossFit safe? Like that's basically what you're talking about investing in.
Exactly. That's SEO. So that is exactly right. So we have content on it. I think the first result from that is at one of our gyms in Texas, which awesome. Thanks for doing that. But that should be us. And so we're doing some of the work we've been doing over the last 6 months is on both the content and infrastructure side, so we can better index this library of amazing content that we have that gives us more prominence in search that allows us to reach more people. we should own any search term around CrossFit. We should also play extraordinarily well in terms that are outside of CrossFit specific. So when you're searching for movements.
There's some great ones of even just like that kind of guerrilla marketing where you search for, like, I can't remember the company that does it, but you search for one thing and a suggested ad comes up and it's like, you surely meant this. And it's like their company instead of the rival. Like, that's basically what you want someone to search Orange Theory and CrossFit to pop up being like, hey, I think you might like Pukey a bit more. And like, come with us, basically.
Totally. And that's what our competitors are doing to us. They're doing it right now. And so there are some areas we're getting outcompeted. So we got to be better there. And then look, we have this extraordinary brand. We have this extraordinary methodology. We have a community that's super passionate. We should also be winning more than our share in broad fitness searches, not just CrossFit, but like want to get fit, want to get healthy, want to build strength. We should win all, you know, a really healthy share of that. So that's another area as we think about reaching audiences where we've got some catch up to do. That's a priority for us going into next year.
Because even like, say, Shut Up and Scribble did a journal reading today. Like the journal, not just like Taylor's diary from when he was a child, but they have Tear Diary, but they did like a reading from that. And like, that's one thing that I have a desire to become more familiar with, because I'm like vastly unfamiliar with it. Like to the point where I asked JR, like how many journal entries are there? And on average, how long are they? Cause I was like, it frustrates me that it's kind of tricky to find, like, it's kind of tricky to navigate or to get. Is that a priority, like putting that stuff into a more like spotlighted position for people to read up on and like learn more about?
Yeah, so there is using content, you know, one, we have this massive library of content that exists on our website that's super hard to find and access. And so one, just from a pure access and discovery perspective. But two, again, coming back to SEO, making sure that we are getting credit for all of that from a PageRank perspective so that, you know, we can really compete on that. So thinking about part of this is new. So how do we, you know, in some respects, you're working backwards from what people are looking for and making sure the content we've created fits incredibly well with it. Some of that is new content, but a lot of it we already have, and we just need to structure it in such a way that we get credit for it.
Like even Sousa started doing audio book, basically versions of the journal. Like that's, to like if someone said to me, hey, what's one really low hanging piece of fruit that CrossFit could do, I'd be like, I'd love to listen to someone read through all the journal articles, because I don't have time to sit down and read through them all, but I do want to know what they all say. And like that seems like, or just add a new entry, like you know, like have someone just kind of pick up the mantle a bit. I know it's hard because Greg was kind of so good at it and stuff, but it's interesting as well. I guess the argument there of reaching the new audience, it's kind of like, do you do that through social media? Do you like drop a chunk of change on, I don't know, some football game at halftime? Or it's a tricky one to kind of, because I suppose as well, the thing is like so many people stream stuff now or pause and fast forward through stuff. It's kind of like, well, what's the average watch time of an advert?
Yeah, I think they're for sure. The other thing that makes this tricky, maybe this is obvious, is like, you know, media and stuff, everyone has an opinion on this and everyone has a kind of a different opinion on the best way to do it. And I think, you know, some of those are informed by what we used to do. And some of it is informed by what other companies do or what works for them. And we should learn. I think we should look at and learn from those. Ultimately, like we've got to be able to test stuff and we've got to be able to see like what's actually working amongst the audience we care about. I think we do have a little bit of bias to index towards content that speaks to us. So like the stuff we love, like the journal content's amazing. Is content from the journal going to get a new member? I don't know. Maybe.
I guess the argument is that it got so many members initially.
100%. You know. Now our next cohort of growth, is it the folks who we've gotten in the past, or are there folks who are looking for something slightly differently that need to hear it? You could argue both ways. Yeah. Our early adopter audience, that type of content resonated super deep. For the next category of folks we want to reach, does that same thing work? If so, great. Or actually, is it something slightly different? The only way we know the answer to that is I think we got to go test it and we got to go see what people respond to that gets them you know, into affiliates.
One of the other things that you mentioned on that Talking Leaf Fitness show was, what's the word I'm looking for? Technology. And like SEO kind of falls into that, I guess. But I kind of got the impression you were talking about maybe migrating everyone to, say, everything that's on kind of .com to the CrossFit Games app, and changing the CrossFit Games app to just the CrossFit app, and that you'd have, because like say .com offers a lot, but as you mentioned, what cohort of people are sitting down on a desktop or like going into Google Chrome to go on something versus tapping on an app that a shit ton of people already have because they're doing the open, or it's an easy thing to pop up in someone's search when they open the app store. And if you had the store that has been relaunched in the last 8 months or whatever with the clothes and stuff, the certificates, which you're obviously, there's a big push on that now because, I mean, it's good for people to educate themselves and it's a good source of income. If you have like Find a Gym Near Me, if you have those journal articles and registration for the open quarterfinals, that kind of stuff as well. Is that something that is maybe on the table?
Yeah, those are exactly the types of things we're thinking about. Like to your point, one, we just need an upgrade to a modern, well-performant, well-designed mobile application, because that's a, you know, on your device, that's how most people are engaging with things. And we've got a little bit of catch up. So, you know, second question is having two separate apps, one for .com, one for games, is that ideal? Probably not. So is there a world in which at some point we want to bring that together? And then we've got, you know, from there, the opportunity is, okay, what do our members of our community value? What helps our affiliates? How do we create a really thoughtful experience? The things you ticked off are some of the things, exactly the types of things we're thinking about.
You mentioned bringing games and .com together. I'll just ask a really blunt question. You can answer it whatever way you want.
Sure.
September 2024. You come back from Texas. The games has not stood on its own two feet as a viable business, money in, money out balance. Like it's kind of still sucked a little bit from the affiliate teat. Do you just cut it loose, or do you say like, we'll keep going, it's important?
I think for us, the games has to serve a really clear purpose in supporting what we're working towards over the next 6-7 years. So, you know, the thesis around our belief and conviction around the games is it's a really important moment throughout the year that energizes an important part of the community and energizing, bringing people together, getting people excited. I think, you know, this is, I've had two games since I've started working here. The tone and the feeling within the community for the couple of months following that is feels really different. And so I think you can look at the games. I'm not sure that looking at the games as an independent business unto itself is the appropriate way to think about the value that it delivers to the rest of our business and the rest of the community. So in part, one of our goals this year is to tighten up how we run the games and be a lot more efficient about how we run it to make sure the return we get is that much stronger, for sure. And we're going to take a look at those numbers to make sure we've made good progress there. We will also look at, increasingly, we're looking at what impact does the sports season, the game specifically, have on new members? Does it have on driving excitement and engagement with existing members? What impact does it have on getting more people doing their L1, their L2, and overall kind of optimism and retention within the community? If at the end of the day, we look and say the return the community and business is getting from the games doesn't warrant its investment, then yeah, we'll look at ways to make changes. But I'll say, I think there's a lot of value that we get from, that the community gets from the games. And so for us now, it's about just how do we tighten it up and make sure we realize more of that value and run it as efficiently as we can.
Yeah. From a purely selfish standpoint, please don't take it away.
Well, look, and honestly, Peter, like there's a lot of people who feel exactly the same way. They can love it. And it's a big part of what they love, and it energizes them and it's exciting. Not 100%. We know there's a lot of people in gyms who couldn't give two shits about what happens at the games, but for a part of the community, it's really important. And it's a part of what makes CrossFit, not the entirety of it, but it's part of what makes this community really special and unique, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's probably something that I forget a lot, is that I assume if you're doing, it's just ignorance on my part because I didn't at the start, but I assume if you're doing CrossFit that like A, you follow the sport, B, you know who like Dave Castro, Don Fall, Nicole Carter, like, you know who all these figures are. Like, whereas in reality, it's such a, like, CrossFit is really niche. And then the people who follow both sides of the spectrum of, like, affiliate and sport is incredibly niche. And then people who follow both of those things enough to know, like, you know, to be able to play a game of guess who with everybody involved is like about 30 people. You know, it's like, it's not a lot. Like, it's, yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's just such a split, not, I don't mean this in a negative way, but it's such a split community of, there are people that are just like, I just go to the gym and do what the coach tells me to do and I like it. And then there's people who are like, no, but if you cut me, like, blue and red CrossFit colors, come, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah.
And that is, like, what you say there is true of everything we do, right?
Yeah.
Any change that happens, anything in the community, you're going to get really diverse perspectives. And that's part of what makes it cool, but also makes it really hard as you're kind of navigating things forward.
This person, I don't know, has asked about this like 8 times. So I'm just going to ask it. The NSEA case, is that finished, over, ongoing? Is that like a long time finished, recently?
Yeah,
finished?
That's not something we can comment on publicly. Sorry.
That's okay. Well, thanks for the $9.99, no name. Appreciate it. one of the things that came up this week actually was, so I don't want to, I'm definitely going to mess this up, but one of Greg's whole things when he was around was educate, legislate, fuck, I can't remember the last one. And then I was curious, that obviously costs money to legislate and to like, you know, bring stuff to court and, like, you know, appeal stuff. Is that something that's like not as to the fore as it was historically, say?
Oh no, I don't have off the top of my head, so I don't want to misrepresent. We spend millions of dollars on this now every year. So we have a big legal team. This is the majority of the work they do.
Litigate. That's the one. Litigate. Sorry.
Go on. Litigate. we are on primarily around IP theft. So protecting the brand. And so we have a really high there. We essentially take reports from the community, reports we discover. We will generally send out a cease and desist letter to the affiliate. And we've gotten the range of, I think we're in like a 98% success rate. Now, it takes time. So there's some cases where folks report stuff and it takes a month or two, but this is an area we spend a lot on, not to say that we can't do more. So we're looking at how do we get more, you know, continue to elevate the impact we have here, but it's definitely a big priority.
And do you look at those kind of things like the, I know a lot of people are saying it's irrelevant, but the licensing thing in California about that, like, have you got, is there people looking at that sort of stuff, or is it mainly, is the IP theft the main kind of concern, if you know what I mean?
Right now the primary focus, so we're always trying to kind of keep tabs on what, you know, anything that's happening could affect us. The bigger focus, so on the legal side, we do a lot of work around kind of IP theft and protecting the brand. We think that's one of the more important responsibilities we have in service to the overall community. So that's probably where the majority of our focus goes.
Yeah, that's fair. If we look back, so say, what are we now, like December 21st? If we sit here on December 21st, 2024, will I be able to, in your opinion, or is it your hope, that I will be able to go back through, you know, quarterly and say, all right, that's where the budget went. That's a clear sign of where the budget went there. Oh yeah, you can definitely see it there. Like, is that what we're talking about with this, like, redirecting the budget? Is it going to be like, not necessarily glitzy, but like visible things that we can see throughout the year?
So what you'll see, so one of the things that we are kicking off in January is every month we're going to do an update for our owners. So our affiliate owners. And in that month, we're going to go over the things that we've changed and shipped and the things they can expect from us over the next month or two. And so that'll be things like, we're doing some tests around how we help affiliates with local search. We're doing updates to a bunch of the resources that they can use. We're continued investments for new affiliates in kind of mentorship. So you'll be able to look over a month by month basis. You can basically kind of track along that a bunch of the work that's happening. It won't be the entirety of, so for example, like what we just went through on the IP front, it's hard to kind of look in aggregate and say, parse out exactly what we've invested there. So there will be a bunch of areas where we will continue to make investments in service of reaching more members of the community and better supporting affiliates. But yes, you should be able to look back over the course of the year and say, hey, what are all the things that CrossFit is supporting today that it wasn't a year ago?
Do you feel pressure, like a kind of split in pressure of, you obviously want to do well by the affiliates and you want things, you want them to, you know, grow and improve and be able to offer a better service. And like part of that is the insistence on the level two, like that things will just be held to a higher standard, I guess. And then the other side of that is it also has like, there's a small little bump in increase of revenue with more people are going to be like chasing certifications and stuff. But do you feel like there's that kind of side of pressure and appeasing, you know, affiliate owners, keeping them on board, keeping them kind of rowing in the same direction as you. But then you also have like a board and investors that are like, hey, you know, we're kind of getting antsy, or we want to sell, we need to increase our like margins, or we want like by 5 years, we want to do this. And we said we were going to be here and we're not there yet. And what's happening? Like, is it like, are you kind of fighting two battles at once all the time?
In some ways, yes. I wouldn't say they're always, you know, we're not pulling in opposite directions. I actually think there's a lot that, you know, when I look at what's best, what we think is best for the community, best for our owners, like, for example, let's take quality in the L2. Independent of any impact in revenue, I think that's the right thing for the community. I think for us, looking and elevating the quality experience inside the affiliate, something we hear all the time from owners, hey, we need to elevate the standard. We need to elevate quality. So I think that's a good example of something that is, I think something we would have done anywhere, even if there was no fiscal impact, because it's the right thing for the community. At the same time, there are, you know, there are certainly for us, I think I talked about on, you know, with Tommy and Sean, like we've got an expectation for where we need to be in terms of what the business looks like. And, you know, our job, my job is to work with our team to try to align what's great for the community the best we can in a way that gets us to where we need to on the business outcomes. And sometimes, you know, Tommy and Sean, I think, asked me, when did you guys first talk about price changes? And I said, the day I started, a year and a half ago. And we decided, you know, at that point, I in my conversation with the board said, we're not doing it right now. We're not ready. You know, we've got work to do to better support the community. And so there is a big part of my responsibility is this dialogue with our board around kind of what we're working towards in the long run that is the right thing for the community, that supports great experiences, reaching more people, strong, healthy, sustainable affiliates, and along the way, making sure that the business growing is a rate that is growing at a rate that works for the board. And again, like it's not perfectly aligned all the time. I'd be full of shit if I told you that. I also think it's not as diametrically opposed as some people think it is. So I think there's a lot that we do that actually is just the right thing for the community. But we do get a little bit. I think there's a time where sometimes it feels like anything that feels like it has a commercial impact is inherently inconsistent with what's best for the community moving forward. And I don't think it's that simple.
Are the investors and the board and stuff, are they all CrossFitters like, or are they like, oh, I used to own a bank and now I've got this pile of cash that I sit on at home and I need to do something with it?
Neither.
That's how you presented.
There's only two options. They're either CrossFitters like, or this.
They're CrossFitters or they're Scrooge McDuck. Like
Let's
one of the
put that in the management philosophy book somewhere as well. Our board is, we have not super deep CrossFit experience. We have some folks on the board who do it now. We have a lot of folks who don't. We have folks who come from a variety of backgrounds. We have some folks who come from an investing background where they've seen lots of businesses, different types of models, some that are, you know, areas where we can learn from, some that are less relevant. We have folks who have run really big, successful businesses, global businesses, communities. And so, you know, part of my job, our job in the dialogue with the board is making sure that we are doing a really good job of communicating what's really unique about our community. And again, I'll, you know, would be the first one to say, I absolutely think we and every business can learn, even if we are fundamentally different. I still think there's things that we can learn from other industries, other businesses, other organizations, other movements who have done things well. My job is to make sure that we communicate the context of what's special and unique about CrossFit so that we can have a dialogue at the board level that is helpful and additive and moves things forward for us in the right sort of way. And when there are times when suggestions will come up in the board meeting that are well-intentioned, that would just never work for our community, that comes up. My job is to say, hey, actually, that won't help us. That doesn't.
Your job is to turn to page one of the management book and just say,
exactly. Let me go back to slide one.
Click. How many, you don't have to answer this if you want, but I just think I have a picture, I have a visual in my head of what a board meeting looks like. Is a board like 10 people or like 100 people?
No, it's like seven. I think either seven or eight. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, look, thank you for coming on. It's been great to catch up. Like you really came across well there, I thought. It's not an easy scenario to be in. I have a job for you before we go. So in December, I am giving away prizes every show that I do. So today, can you see the live chat?
I cannot.
So if you click where it says comments. Wait,
do I want to see it?
Yeah, most of them, yeah. So if you just like kind of have a little scroll up and down there, I don't mind who you pick. You can pick anyone.
Oh, sweet.
And they're going to win frog grips, grips, knee sleeves, thumb tape, all that kind of stuff I get sent out to them. They won't have it for Christmas, but they'll have it before next Christmas. So you can just pick, you can pick a complimentary comment. You can pick an aggressive one. You can pick a vanilla. I don't mind. The only rule is.
The guy who said Merry Christmas. Let's give it to him. That was really
Will. Yeah.
Will.
Where is that? Will. Okay. Will. I can't find his comment, but oh, there it is. Merry Christmas. That was nice. Pays to be kind, Will, doesn't it? Thanks. Thank you for coming on. It's been great to catch up with you. We'll see you around, I guess. Good luck with the next. Did you just hide the comments?
Good for my mental health.
Yeah. They actually aren't that bad, in fairness. There's some.
I did watch comments once when I did a live broadcast. I will never do that again.
It's so hard. I do another show where it's like a debate thing, and I have to do a clock and be ready to mute people after 60 seconds. You're lucky I remembered that this was a normal interview. I didn't start doing that. and I have to do both those things. So like the chat, I'm just like, fuck it. I'm not even like, I'll catch up on it every so often, but like, it's just not going to happen to do that here. This guy, actually, Keith,
there he is.
Do you know, you don't pronounce the K in his name. I'm so sick of this joke myself. It's just Eth Knapp.
I like it.
Yeah. He's a really good guy. Really good dude. Thank you for coming on. It's been great to catch up. Thanks to everybody for watching. This actually might be the most live viewers I've ever had.
Wow. Congratulations. That's big.
So I might make like $5 off this.
Don't spend it all in one place. You can buy a copy of my leadership philosophy book. I'll send it to you.
I'm a co-author. I'm ghostwriter.
Right. You just have to pay for it, though. You didn't have that for value.
If this video goes away, I think it does, you might see me on that board before too long with my pile of cash.